Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oi! The boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and, frankly, appalling language. And sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature. So keep the volume down if there are kiddies around. And thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty. It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mates and now it's time to go. Cause it's the booty booty. It's time to get this party started. It's the booty booty. It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is booty booty. It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to FP Presents CF Montreal Three Questions. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Welcome to CF Montreal, Three Questions, week 8 of the two of us. I've got Ollie Brett here with me, play-by-play man, host on BPM Sports and also RDS. And I'm Amy Walsh. I sometimes forget to say who I am, but I'm Amy Walsh. The most important person is here, and that's Ollie. But we're soldiering on. So week 8 and some adversity thrown at the CF Montreal side. But they will finally be returning home to Montreal to face the juggernaut that is FC Cincinnati. But that six-game tournament or snapshot, the way that Laurent Courtois framed it, has come to a close. I think probably not finishing the way that they would have liked. But we'll dive into three questions. So we will get into back home, they've sort of crashed back down to earth. So was the side that garnered 7 points from Orlando, Dallas, and Miami, respectively, to open the season, simply benefiting, perhaps, from a new coach bump? That's one. Two is Courtois versus Nancy. Much was made about the similarities between the two men and their coaching philosophies. But is the clear difference in experience showing early in Courtois' tenure? And we will end with Joel Waterman. And he's grown into impressive leader, but is he only a peacetime general? Can he also be a wartime general? So early days for sure, Ollie, but we'll dive into all that. But first of all, how are you doing?
Doing okay. Still kind of getting over that weirdly eerie evening in Seattle. And I'm not talking about the weather, which was very typically spring Seattle, but wasn't expecting that result at the weekend, to be honest, especially after the season launch last Tuesday, a big event, 2,000 season ticket holders, downtown Montreal. It felt like it energized a group that in the end started the game quite well. I thought the first 15 minutes were absolutely on the right track. And then you get that deflected goal by Raul Rui Diaz, an avoidable penalty 7 minutes later. And then it was basically just downhill from there.
Yeah, it was about the way the team responded as well. And we'll dive into that. But it was, if you look at Chicago, I think is forgettable for a variety of reasons for the conditions that they played in, the refereeing decisions that seemed to go against them. DC was forgettable in terms of the entirety of the performance, which just seemed lackluster. So it was a promising start for this team against a side that we knew was going to be hungry in Seattle, previously winless Seattle, but we knew that they had all the pieces to put things together, especially at Lumen Field, which is a notoriously difficult place to play. So what about that response, Ollie? I mean, well, I guess we can dive into our first question. So is this kind of where they should sit, or is reality set in for this side now, who started so brightly, but now is coming into Montreal on a three-game slide? Which is the real CF Montreal? Is it somewhere in between? And did they get a bump from Laurent Courtois bringing in this sort of fresh energy into Montreal from a coaching perspective, but also I think he was everything that the fans expected and wanted to drive this side to success.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were at that event last Tuesday in Montreal, and the welcome Laurent Courtois got, I mean, he's experienced a lot of professional football in his career before coaching. I'm sure he had some highlights, but that was definitely one. I mean, you're still, with all due respect to Laurent Courtois, just based on your resume, you're still no one on the coaching hierarchy in North America. Yet you get that kind of welcome from the fans. It was absolutely incredible. I'll come back to that part in a second, but
yeah,
you're talking about what happened at the weekend. I find there's an awful lot of small mistakes, individual mistakes that were made since that Chicago game that you'll have to look inwardly if you're one of those players. You'll have to look at your players if you're Laurent Courtois, because Raheem Edwards getting sent off, Joel Waterman tackling from behind in DC getting sent off and then having that rescinded.
Getting a break of sorts there, because he could have easily been sent off, as you said.
Jonathan Serrois dropping that ball on the winner from Kellen Acosta against Chicago. Nathan Saliba with a sending off that for me was always coming. You just felt it at the end of the first half. He comes back out in the second half and gets sent off as well. The penalty that was given away, I think, was avoidable because the kick that Joel Waterman puts out is after the ball already beat him. So they're all little aspects that to me really need to be looked at. But the good news is they're individual mistakes. And you were asking, are they sitting where they should be? Yes. The only real problem with those 7 points that you got off six away matches to start the season, we'll have to repeat it all year long. Last year, they had 2 wins on the road out of 17 away matches. They already have 2 wins. They got 8 points overall on 17 matches away. They already have 7 in the bank. That's, you would have signed for that any day of the week. The problem is you're on a 3-game losing streak now. If you were able to intersect those results by defeats, you'd be in a completely different feel and vibe coming back to Stade Saputo. So I think that's the main thing. And I always said from the get-go, when Laurent Courtois came in, they will get more points away, but I think they will drop some points at home that they got last year because they were more pragmatic. They were trying to play a bit less. I think there are matches that are going to be in the balance. Sometimes they'll go for you. Sometimes they won't. It'll be 0-0, 1-1. And like Wilfried Nancy used to do back in the day, Laurent Courtois is going to go for it. And I think that's exactly what the fans want. And I think that in terms of getting points, you'll be in the green at the end of the day, but you will also drop some points along the way. And I think that's what you've seen since the start of the season. Now, is it a bump from having a new coach? Yeah, a bit. But you've also played against Miami that didn't have Messi, didn't have Luis Suarez in the starting 11, didn't have Busquets. You played FC Dallas, their second last out west. Then you played Orlando. That's really not doing well. I believe they're second last in the East, and everybody was expecting them at the beginning of the year. I remember on the broadcast call, Oscar Pereira's assistant was talking about winning MLS Cup. That was the ambition and still is in Orlando, but they're far from it with their start to the season. So I think the opposition that they faced is maybe what explains the better results over the first 3 games as well.
Right. And they were able to capitalize on that. There's a lot in what your response that I want to dig into that sort of transitions us naturally to our second question. But I want to come back to this performance just a little bit in Seattle. And you were talking about the individual mistakes. Mm-hmm. And you're right that those are easier to rectify than I think wiping the slate clean and looking at the collective. But Laurent Courtois did talk about that he expected more from this group. And there was a little bit of a letdown. But for me, it is Courtois, and going back to that launch, he talked about things that are non-negotiables, intangibles. But he wants to, in terms of tactics, he wants to arrive in the box by design the way that they want to, with intent. They want to be more aggressive defensively. They want to be consistent. So we haven't really seen that through 6 games, but it's always a balance of gratitude, joy, and that grind. And that, to me, that last one, so two of the avoidable things that you discussed there, you talked about Waterman's penalty that he concedes, comes from a knockdown. The first goal that they give away to Seattle, which is against the run of play, because you mentioned those first 15, 20 minutes where they did perform well, that's another knockdown. It's a header one at the back post on a dead ball where the player, the Seattle player, I think it's Morris, is outnumbered 3-1, and that falls to Rui Diaz, and it is a fortuitous sort of glance off the bottom of Saliba's boot, and it sends a looping ball over Sirwa. Nothing you can do about it, but you can avoid the things that happened before that.
Yeah.
So that to me is what's of concern. It's the collective nature of the performance and where they sort of let Courtois down and let themselves down in terms of the blue collar work and the character things that they're meant to be all in on. And that's a concern.
I agree. Like, one guy you'll never fault on that is Matias Kokoro up top, right? He's, I remember there's one play, I believe it was in the first half, where he chases it just before halftime. I think he chases a ball down the right and he ends up getting either a foul. He got a foul, and that was a ball that was going nowhere. It's that kind of grit and willingness to follow through, even though you don't have a high percentage of, like, the odds are against you basically, but you still go for it and you're committed. And that's the part that I agree is non-negotiable. Now, getting beaten in the air, is it reps? Is it guys that are still not quite sure who's coming, who's going? Because talking about Laurent Courtois, I wonder, this time last year, does he start Saliba? Does he start Joaquin Sosa instead of Alvarez? Like, he made some changes that were, I don't know about you, but a bit surprising to me. Mm-hmm. Alvarez got 3 starts in a row. Against DC, he was one of the better guys at the back. I remember there's one sequence where he blocked 2 shots in a row, and you just felt that everybody around him had his back because he was really important on that back line. So that's going to be interesting to see how those changes to a starting 11 from one game to the next and changes subs within the game evolve under Laurent Courtois over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, and they're necessary to manage loads and to give guys a chance to make their mark and to get some valuable minutes. But you talked about Sosa, but there was also the insertion of George Campbell in that back line. So out of your back three, you've got Joel Waterman, who's the general back there and has done very well. And we'll dive into him a little bit later, but that's 2 changes. I mean, it's not a wholesale change of your back line, but that's a pretty significant change in a portion of your team shape and your collective that's done pretty well. And you just cycle 2 guys out.
And you also bring in Saliba to sit beside Samuel Piet. So that means that in a very close proximity, you have 3 guys who are thrown in there. And I think you'll agree with me that individually, we have no issue with those guys starting a match. It's just the fact that from one week to the next, I don't know if it was to send a message to players who were involved in the DC game where everybody was a bit flat. I don't know if it was to get some answers coming into a stretch where you're playing 2 consecutive games at home. Like, I don't know Laurent Courtois well enough to get into that psyche of his at the moment and try to understand what was the short-term versus medium-term plan. But I think it was maybe a few too many changes at once, at least for the starting 11.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe coming down to earth a little bit in that regard too, to say that maybe we're not quite ready for this. We should have allowed that starting 11 to kind of recover on their own terms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so second question though, because you just talked about Courtois not knowing him well enough, but much was made of the similarities between Courtois and Wilfried Nancy at the beginning of the year when Courtois was hired. But is the difference in Courtois' lack of experience at the MLS level and as a head coach of full-time professionals, is that showing a little bit early in his tenure here in Montreal?
I suppose it'd be a really interesting conversation to have with him because after the match, he was quite transparent. Like, he said, listen, I was very confident in what I thought we were able to do. I, in hindsight, was too confident in what we did. I have to take a long, hard look at myself in the mirror. You even have Joel Waterman, who came out and said, yeah, okay, the coach has his responsibility, but all the players on the pitch, starting with me, we have to make sure that we deliver as well. And we fell well short. So I find that everybody taking accountability is a really, really good sign at this moment. Whereas you could start pointing fingers right, left and center after three losses in a row. Now, coming back to Courtois, it was the first time I kind of started thinking about Wilfried Nancy year two. And I remember after him taking over in 2021, he already had not only five seasons of experience as an assistant in MLS, but he had five seasons in that specific club. And CF Montreal is a particular club to navigate. And I think that's something that people maybe underestimate when someone's coming in from the outside. But he also had that experience under Mauro Biello in 16-17, Rémi Garde 18-19. Then there was the interim of Wilmer Cabrera, where he wasn't given the interim. So he was assistant coach. And then under Thierry Henry. So you have in very difficult circumstances in that first pandemic year. So you have those 5 years of experience with very different characters in terms of coaching styles and personalities. And you had some big personalities to deal with, the Nacho Piattis. You had Didier Drogba. You had Saphir Taida. So he was able to look at all these coaches, make decisions. Maybe he agreed with them. Maybe at other times he was saying, well, I wouldn't have done it that way. But that all goes in your backpack. And once we give you the job in 2021, I believe he was better equipped just because he had that contact with MLS. But what really came back to me at the weekend after that 5-0 loss is a conversation I had on the radio with Wilfried in 2022. I believe it was the start of the season. And I asked him something to the effect of, what's different year two compared to this time last year? You know, what do you feel is going to be something you'll do differently or better? And he said, trust my gut feeling. He said, I realize that my gut feeling is often right for what I want to do. Maybe another coach would have another philosophy, just pack up shop and make sure that you take a point. His thing was quite the opposite. It's go all in. And he said, I need to trust that gut feeling. But I think that's because he had 6 years of training behind him and noticing when his gut feeling was right, was wrong, when head coaches didn't trust theirs. And that allowed him over 5 years of assistant and 1 year of head coach to say, you know what, 2022, I'm trusting myself. And there's just no chance Laurent Courtois is there yet. Does it make him not as good of a coach potentially as Wilfried Nancy? Absolutely not. But is he in the same place at the same stage of his career when Nancy took over? I think the answer is no there as well.
Yeah, it's a really good point to make, because I don't think anyone would say that Courtois is out of his depth.
No, but absolutely not.
No, that's not what we're saying. But you compare it and you just look at the experience gleaned, the learnings that Nancy was able to take in when he wasn't the guy having to make the decisions. He was able to interpret different situations, management of human beings, of personalities, how it fit into the collective, and then get an understanding of a certain approach, put that into his toolbox, and then do it with a variety of personalities and a variety of situations to set himself better or set himself up better for when he was at the helm. So I think it's a really, really good point to make. But I want to go back to that Waterman quote, because in French, he said it's good to get a claque au visage sitôt. So it reminds me, it's good to get kind of punched in the mouth. And it reminds me of the Mike Tyson quote.
Everyone has a plan
till they get punched in the mouth. And so in a sense, and this is steering us slightly away from Courtois and Nancy, but does a 6-game road trip early on in the year, which is really what CF Montreal is handed at the beginning of each season? I mean, this is a little bit longer because of what's going on with the Big O. Yeah. Does it teach you more about your team that you're prepared to understand or willing to understand at this point in the year? Or is this something that is really seen as a positive from Courtois' standpoint, that these are lessons that maybe we might only learn mid-season, but we've been put in it? We have to fight against adversity. They're coming home. They have to manufacture or get prepared to deliver a response in front of their fans who gave them such an ovation when they were in town last week. But now they have to produce on the field. So, I mean, it's a way of finding a silver lining in a hand that nobody really wants to get dealt. But are these good lessons to learn like this early in the season?
I think the answer is in a quote Laurent Courtois gave us just before the game. We spoke to him last Thursday before the Seattle game, and he said, these six games, we always saw them as an investment in the future. And I think that if you had that approach since game one, then you protected yourself against yourself getting ahead of things, right? But
right.
Now, if you're trying to rationalize on the back end of three losses, whereas you thought you were on a high after the first three games where you win, you draw, you win, then you're flipping and flopping. And that would concern me a bit more, because that was years ago before Olivier Renard came, one of the Impact's big faults. You'd be on a two-game winning streak. Everything was fine. You'd lose two in a row. You'd want to change everything, and you flipped and flopped way too much. But if you did see this as a block of six games, as Laurent Courtois said, a small championship before we start the season at home, and now this is what's happening at the weekend, then I don't have an issue. I think you were always going to see it as a huge learning curve. And I'm sorry, but if you detach yourself from the emotions of these last three games, you have 7 points in the bank. You right. would have signed for that any day of the week. And it reminds me of, I had a conversation on the radio a few years back with Nick DeSantis, who was sporting director at the time at the Impact. And I asked him, what happened with Jesse Marsh? Because remember, 2012, Jesse Marsh comes in. He was coming back in 2013. And all of a sudden, a few days after confirming everything was okay, he was coming back. Media gets summoned and they part ways. And I asked him, what happened? Like, what would you do differently? And Nick was really interesting, because he said, we had an objective of being competitive throughout our expansion season. And once we felt we had that, we changed the objective. We wanted more. We got, I don't want to say greedy, but we started pushing the envelope a bit more. And in
ambitious,
the end,
Ollie, maybe.
Sure. Let's,
semantics.
Let's call it that. But it's semantics, but the words you use do matter, right? Because if all of a sudden you gave somebody a mission, they deliver on that. But because they fell short in areas where you didn't expect them to be that competitive, you start criticizing them, asking more, putting more pressure. That's where things can get fragile. The objective was to get points on the road. If they had come back with four, but it was over the last two games, you'd say the momentum is fantastic. They're back home. They finally got points and things are clicking. You have seven in the bag now. And the feeling is, ooh, they lost three on the bounce. Rightly so, because you didn't want to lose them and you weren't competitive enough. But I think you need to really take a step back and say, this mini championship, did we deliver mathematically in terms of points taken? Yeah, you did.
Yeah, well, I always like to deliver mathematically. I mean, I think in words and I language, I deliver better than I do in math. But
yeah.
we'll
join
move
the,
on.
Join the club.
Yeah, okay, good.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
So our third question, and we'll wrap up with this. We spoke about that back line and the amount of changes to Joel Waterman's left and right. What we want to talk about is leadership for a second. So is he only a peacetime general? Is he a better leader when things are going well for the team? But can he also be sort of tested, and can he also be that same leader when things aren't going so good or go so well as a wartime general? So what do you think about Waterman and his leadership skills?
Well, I think the point you're starting at, we need to take a step back there too and just realize that, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're both taking for granted that he's at the very least a peacetime general. Do we agree on that?
Yes.
So imagine if we said that 3 or 4 years ago, that he'd be the guy in the middle of that back line, and we'd be confident that he had the feed, he had the presence, he was a Canadian international. I mean, we would have never believed that in 2020 when he came in for under Thierry Henry, and then 2021 he really started finding his feet. So the fact that he made all those steps, and I remember having a chat with Laurent Simon a few years back, and he said that Simon had to have a proper talk with Waterman and say, listen, when we speak to you and we give you advice, and this was coming from one general to a potential other one with CF Montreal, we're not looking to criticize you. We're not looking to change the nature of your game. Anything that's good for you is going to be good for us. So we ask you to be a bit more open and see that we're trying to get you to leapfrog your career to the next step, which is exactly what happened. And I don't think Joel Waterman, sometimes in Montreal, yet last Tuesday, he got a huge ovation as well, and just shows you the standing, the difference in standing that he has in 2024 versus 2020 or 2021. Now, the next step is exactly that. When the chips are down, when stuff is going wrong, when people start panicking or getting emotional around him, can he be that calming presence? Rudy Camacho was not always perfect, but you just felt that the tougher it got, the more he was there putting a challenge in, the more he was. So many people spoke to me, young defenders or just defenders full stop, saying, yeah, Rudy was like a big brother to me, and he gave me lots of advice. That's the next step Joel Waterman needs to take. Now, the issue is everything went really fast for him. He was a guy playing on the side. And then when Camacho left in August last year, he became the man. And he became an international as well. So has he made that adjustment so far? We'll see over the next few games. I think that based on every step, plateau he's reached and then pushed it to the next one, I think we're entitled to think he's able to do it. But at the moment, do you have enough of a sample of games where things are going wrong and he's the one that you feel is really bossing the place, getting everybody back on the right path and calming things? We haven't seen that yet, but that's definitely the next step in his career. If he does that, I mean, he's starting Copa America. He's never going anywhere but MLS at the very least, maybe even to Europe. Like it's that big of an opportunity for Joel Waterman in 2024.
Yeah, because that mantle is there for the taking at the national team level. Absolutely. As well. But something you said there about Waterman, that conversation that he had with Laurent Simon, when was that?
It must have been 2.5, if not 3 years ago.
Okay, that makes sense. But because I think since then, he's been challenged and he's responded well. I think about Joel Waterman and his body language. He was almost petulant on field last year at the beginning of Hernán Losada's reign with CF Montreal, where he was clearly displeased at what he was being asked to do. And that's not what you want to see in your leader. And I think
go ahead. No, go.
I was just going to finish my thought to say that I think the next step that he has to take, because he has done that very well, you know, it's this, the old is never a straight line A to B in terms of finding success. There's, you zoom in and there's that, those, yeah, you know, mountains, and there's those valleys, there's those ebbs and those flows. And so he's ridden those out very well and admirably, and continued to chip away and made progression. But where I think the next step lies for him to take, to jump to that next level at the international level, but also to be a wartime general, is to show that emotional maturity in mm-hmm. the difficult moments. Because it's not only about your own game. We have a tendency as players to be insular and selfish. We want to succeed because if we do our jobs, we perform our roles the way that we're asked, or the way that our coaching staff is asking us to perform, and we do that well, chances are you put the pieces together and the team's having success. But when you're wearing that armband and you're asked to do more as part of that leadership group, it's about more than you. And you have to be a leader even when you're not performing at your best. And that's where I think Joel Waterman really has to improve.
I 100% agree with that. And just so we're clear, we're not talking about selfishness. He just wasn't in that position, right? You had Rudy Camacho, who was the guy in the middle at the back. You had Victor Wanyama, who was playing just in front of you. So you had those guys who were clearly given roles in terms of leading the team and being a driving force down the middle. Now, it's, as you said, basically it's a mindset shift. I think he had to be so about himself at first, because I don't think everybody believed he had what he's showing in him. And everybody I speak to, that's the greatest quality that comes out of conversations about Joel Waterman. It can also be a fault, because players like that can be stubborn, but he believed in himself so much that he never cut corners, he never compromised, and look where he is now. So I think you need to keep that in your game, yet you need to add another aspect, which is be about service to others. And that's when you end up calming somebody who's panicking to your right, communicating with your midfielders in front of you to make sure that they've got their stuff in check, not just that you're on top of your own game. And just to finish off on his comments at the beginning of last year, I agree with you, but hindsight makes me give him a pass on that one, because everybody was annoyed with the fact that they didn't have a clue how they were supposed to play. Yeah. All they were told was, it's not going to be the same as last year. Okay, well, if my wife tells me, well, we're not going to the park with our daughter today, we're doing something else, well, I'm left stranded here. Like, what am I packing for? What's the actual thing we're going to do? And that's where, especially coming from a Wilfried Nancy system in 2012, where guys at the back, especially Joel Waterman, who likes to play at his feet, loved playing, to something where they weren't sure what was going on, with a ton of players frustrated that they were even in the place, like Kai Kamara, like Kamal Miller. I think that kind of got everything really convoluted early 2023.
Yeah, well, it's a really good discussion about Joel Waterman. We didn't even get into Gabriele Corbo, which I think he continues to be underrated. And maybe 100%. He's the glue on that back line. Does he deserve some more credit? So next time, next week, perhaps on CF Montreal 3 Questions. But thank you so much for joining us. FuboTV.com/footyprime for Premier League, Ligue 1, any of your national team games, TonyBet.ca. But thank you, Ollie, as usual. Great chat.
Always a pleasure.
So keep like listening, subscribing to Footy Prime. Tune in to our podcast for anything and everything about CF Montreal. And cheers for listening.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV and by TonyBet. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.